Okay. Hello, everyone. Welcome to today's call on the MDCH confirmatory testing for carbapenem-resistant Enterobacteriaceae, or CRE. I am Marty Bain. I am the antimicrobial resistance microbiologist here at the Michigan Department of Community Health Laboratory. And with me today on the call is Allison Murad. She's going to help me run the slides. Also, we will be recording this call today, and if you have any objections, please hang up now. Okay, before we get to the discussion of the new test that we'll be offering, we're going to be talking about a little bit of background information, how we were able to initiate this project, and then we'll be giving some instructions about what we would like our clinical lab partners to do, and then we'll take questions at the end. So a little bit of discussion of how we got here today. Carbapenem resistance is becoming a very serious concern. And I do not have them listed on this slide, but the antibiotics we're talking about when we describe the carbapenems include four drugs that are approved for use in the United States by the FDA: imipenem, meropenem, ertapenem, and dorapenem. And the way we know that they're carbapenems is they all end in penem, so that's kind of easy to remember. The carbapenem-resistant organisms usually cause infections in people that are already very sick. These are multi-drug-resistant organisms, MDRO, and because they are resistant to so many antibiotics, we are left with very, very few options for treating them. The carbapenems are some of our more broad-spectrum and powerful antibiotics, and once resistance to the carbapenems occur, we have really very few options. They also cause high morbidity and mortality, and they have been described, these organisms have been described as an infection prevention and control emergency by many people, including the CDC. Resistance to carbapenem can occur basically through one of two mechanisms. Organisms can produce an enzyme called the carbapenemase, and it is a beta-lactamase enzyme. You might want to think of it as a beta-lactamase on steroids. It's resistant to all of the beta-lactams, unlike, say, ESBLs, which are resistant to most beta-lactams. The carbapenemases include KPC and NDM1. There are others, but these are the two that are of current concern in the U.S. KPC stands for Klebsiella pneumoniae carbapenemase, and NDM is a New Delhi metallobeta-lactamase. Another mechanism that can cause resistance to the carbapenem is the production of other types of beta-lactamases combined with a foreign loss. That means that even though these antibacterials may work against the particular organism, there are fewer channels for the antimicrobials to actually get into the bacterial cell. So we're more concerned about the organisms that actually produce the carbapenemase enzyme when it comes to infection prevention and control, because they are more easily spread, or the resistance is more easily spread to other organisms. The laboratory detection of these organisms is very complex, and we're going to be talking a little bit about that today, but not in great detail. Next slide, please. Again, as background, all of our microbiology labs in Michigan should have received the documents relating to antimicrobial susceptibility testing from the CLSI. CLSI is the Clinical and Laboratory Standards Institute, and clinical laboratories look to these documents for guidance in many areas of laboratory testing, but especially in antimicrobial susceptibility testing. When discussing the CLSI documents, we usually refer to the document number more often than the name of the document. And you'll find the document number always in the upper right-hand corner of the cover. All of these documents look the same. They're all navy blue with white printing on them, and it can be very confusing which one we're referring to. So we generally refer to them by their document number. M stands for that the document is a microbiology document, and the three that we that are of particular relevance to susceptibility testing are the M2, and we're on version A11, that's the disc diffusion procedure. M7, the A9 version, that means the ninth approved version. That is the document that discusses the MIC dilution reference method and the M100 supplement number 22. That is a very thick document that lists all of our interpretive breakpoints, our quality control ranges, and it's got some good summaries of screening and confirmatory test recommendations and procedures inside. Now, all of these versions were from earlier in 2012. The M100 document is updated every January, and we are very happy to announce that we have received some funding to purchase the 2013 document for you, and we've already placed our order ahead of time. So if you do not have money in your budget to purchase that document in January, we have good news for you. As I said, everyone should already have copies of these documents, and we do urge you to refer to them, especially the M100 supplement. And another good resource for understanding and making the best use out of these documents is offered every year, early in the year, generally late January or early February, a series by Janet Tindler. And I believe these webinars will be through the APHL, the Association of Public Health Laboratories, and there will be two of them. One is a basic introduction to the CLSI documents, and the other is a more intermediate level for those people who have had some introduction to the documents. Okay, so now we're on slide number 4. And I mentioned that the detection of these organisms is currently very complicated in our laboratories, and part of the reason for that is that there are currently two sets of breakpoints for the interpretation of our numerical test results, whether we're talking about the MIC value or the disc diffusion zone size for the carbapenem antibiotics. The numerical breakpoints are what we use to then determine whether to consider an organism susceptible, intermediate, or resistant. So the current FDA-cleared breakpoints that are installed on our automated susceptibility testing instrument, there have been some reports that, and it's pretty well considered, that these breakpoints will actually miss some of our carbapenemase-producing isolates that have somewhat elevated MIC values, but they still fall into the interpretive breakpoints as susceptible. Now, the carbapenem breakpoints were revised in CLSI in June 2010 to address this problem, and the MIC breakpoint values were actually lowered so that we would not be missing any of these organisms. But laboratories who are using an FDA-cleared automated instrument really have to use the breakpoints as the manufacturer has installed them unless they are able to do an in-house validation. So you can be sure that our instrument manufacturers are trying hard to get the new breakpoints approved through the FDA for their particular instrument. But in the meantime, we do have some difficulties with that. I also want to mention that some of the stuff with corn and the Astrium and breakpoints had already been revised by CLSI previously, January 2009. So we have a couple of sets of new breakpoints that we're dealing with here. Laboratories, again, are advised to validate the new CLSI breakpoints against a reference method. And there are basically two options for that, for those reference methods. One of them is the Kirby-Bauer disc diffusion method that can be performed as instructed in that CLSI document M2 version A11 that we were talking about earlier. And the other one is a broth microdilution if it's performed following the instructions in the CLSI M7 A9 document. But even if a laboratory wants to validate the new breakpoints, it can be very, very hard to find commercial MIC panels that have these lower breakpoint dilutions. So we are, during this transition, in a little bit of a dilemma about detecting these organisms. In addition, labs are advised to send organisms with unusual resistance to a referral laboratory for confirmation. And these referral laboratories can also be hard to find. And so, on the next slide, we were very, very pleased to discover that CDC and APHL offered a funding opportunity last fall, kind of arising from the priority that's being placed on healthcare-associated infections through the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services. And also, in our own state, our healthcare-associated infection prevention plan recognize the need for development of confirmatory testing capability for the CRE, the carbapenem resistant Enterobacteriaceae, and that plan has been in place since 2009. So in October, we learned that we were one of two states to receive funding to establish this confirmatory testing. The other state is Indiana. And again, we were very, very happy to learn this. And this grant provides funding through this coming June to 2013. At this point, I would like to clear up a potential point of confusion. We're talking today about just the laboratory testing portion of working with carbapenem-resistant Enterobacteriaceae, CRE. You may be aware, and many of you may be participating, that we also have a CRE prevention initiative that is operating under the direction of Brenda Brennan in our SHARP unit in the Bureau of Epidemiology. And this project fits nicely into that CRE prevention initiative, but it is completely separate, and the instructions that I'm going to give today to the laboratories may differ slightly from those that we are using in that CRE prevention initiative as far as the definition of what organisms we will be interested in. We will be working closely together with the SHARP unit and the CRE prevention initiative in this project, but I do want to emphasize that it may seem confusing because there are a few differences. Okay, on slide 6, the goal of the funding proposal was to develop non-automated antimicrobial susceptibility testing capacity in state public health laboratories for CRE and also VRSA, and to provide confirmatory testing for clinical laboratories within their jurisdiction. As you know, VRSA is also a public health and infection control emergency, and Michigan has certainly had some experience with this organism, so I'm not planning to go into great detail today. We have the dubious distinction of having had 9 of the known 13 VRSA isolates that have been detected in the U.S., and we are still certainly interested in capturing any more of those that may be out there. On the next slide, the activities funded by the grant included implementing non-automated methods to confirm CRE and VRSA, implementing PCR assays for the most common mechanisms of carbapenem and vancomycin resistance using CDC protocols, developing and maintaining partnerships with our clinical laboratories, and that's why we're having this webinar today. Foster situational awareness of antimicrobial resistance, including real-time communication with our state epidemiologist and healthcare-associated infections coordinator, Jenny Fink. And pilot a CDC framework for public health surveillance for critical bacterial antimicrobial resistance. On the next slide, I want to talk a little bit about how we proposed our project in Michigan and the design of it, and it includes several elements. We plan to perform MIC testing by the CLSI reference microbroth dilution method, and we'll be testing the four carbapenem drugs, imipenem, meropenem, ertapenem, and doripenem. We'll also be testing 1/3 generation cephalosporin, and we've chosen ceftriaxone. There will be a cefamycin on the panel, cefoxitin, and the monobactam, aztreonam. We included these other drugs because they may give us some clues whether there are other beta-lactam resistance mechanisms going on, such as AMP-C beta-lactamase or an extended spectrum beta-lactamase. We will be interpreting the results and reporting using the newest CLSI breakpoints. Because we are running a reference method, we're able to do that. On the next slide, we will also be performing the modified Hodge test, which can be performed with either ertapenem or meropenem. Our lab will be using meropenem. We will run PCR testing for the KPC gene and the NDM1 gene, and the genes are designated by the particular nomenclature that's on the right. The BLA subscript KPC is how we write the KPC gene, and the NDM gene is very similar. There's also a VRSA component to the testing. We will be initiating or implementing PCR testing for the VAN-A gene in Staph aureus as well. On slide 10, we will be performing that modified Hodge test if any of the carbapenem MICs are intermediate or resistant using the new breakpoint. We'll perform the PCR for the KPC and NDM1 gene if we have any intermediate or resistant carbapenem. If the organism is resistant to third-generation cephalosporins, and modified Hodge test positive. I think that last point might be up to change. We might be performing them for modified Hodge test negative as well. We hope to get a better handle on how the modified Hodge test correlates to this resistance. So I apologize for that confusion. This is still a work in progress as this project goes along, so there may be changes once we start testing. We will report the results back to the submitter, and we'll also be sharing our results with our state HAI coordinator, Jenny Finks, and her SHARP unit. On the next slide, and here's where our clinical lab partners come in. Your role will be, as always, as to be our sentinel partner. Again, we do not get cultures here at the state lab, so we rely solely on our clinical partners to detect these possible carbapenem-resistant isolates of Enterobacteria aciase. We also rely on you to detect any possible vancomycin resistance in isolates of Staph aureus, as you know. And we hope that you're able to use the newest recommendations from CLSI to the extent possible in your laboratory, and then send all of the suspect isolates to the MDCH laboratory in Lansing for confirmation. And right now, we are asking that all isolates be sent. We honestly don't have a good handle on how many might be out there. So this guidance could change if you inundate us with resistant isolates. So we'll have to see about that. But we are hoping to get good surveillance on the resistance that we are seeing out there in our state. So on slide 12, for laboratories that are using the older CLSI breakpoints, that is those that are currently cleared by the FDA and that were published in CLSI documents prior to June 2010. We would like you to send us your isolates. If you get a result from your instrument using those older breakpoints, intermediate or resistant to any of the carbapenems. And as you should be following current guidance from CLSI, that even if you get carbapenem susceptible, you should take a look at the results for cephalosporins and also look at your MIC values for carbapenem. So if you have the third generation cephalosporins resistant, take a look at the MIC value for your carbapenem. And if it is an MIC of 2 or 4, even though under the old breakpoint criteria that would be interpreted as susceptible, it still might be an isolate that is producing carbapenemase. And again, the current CLSI recommendation is to follow up and do modified Hodge testing on those isolates. We realize that that may not be happening in all laboratories, but we would be interested in taking a closer look at those organisms. On slide 13, so this is kind of how the workflow would go for laboratories using the older breakpoints, and we will be publishing a visual flow chart for you. It's not quite ready, and this testing, we do not anticipate this testing to begin before mid-January, so we have a little bit of time left to get that out to you. But if you have intermediate or resistant results to at least one of the carbapenems reported off your panel, or the MIC to any kind of meropenem or ertapenem is greater than or equal to 2, and that isolate is resistant to one or more of the cephalosporins in the third generation, or what we call subclass 3, and I've listed those for you here. Cefepirazone, cefotaxime, ceftazidime, ceftazoxime, and ceftriaxone. And regardless of whether you are performing the modified Hodge test in your laboratory, regardless of the results of the modified Hodge test, if the organism fulfills that criteria, we would like to test it. On the next slide, slide 14, for laboratories that are using the newer CLSI breakpoints, and there are a few that have done their own in-lab validation and that are using the new breakpoints that are, the most current ones are from January 2012, we would ask that since you're interpreting and reporting carbapenems according to Table 2A in the CLSI document from January, that you would send any intermediate or resistant isolates to MDCH, and that would be intermediate or resistant to one or more of the carbapenems. So on page 15, we have a list of, or partial list, of what to submit to us. And we will be asking that you submit a pure culture on an auger slant of any species of Enterobacteriaceae that fits that criteria that we just discussed. And I've listed here the major genera of Enterobacteriaceae just as a reminder. And I guess the important point here is that this testing will not include Pseudomonas isolates that are resistant to carbapenem, nor any Acinetobacter that are resistant to carbapenem. So we know there are quite a few out there, but we're not able to test those at this time. And if you have an isolate of one of the more obscure genera of the Enterobacteriaceae and you're not sure, go ahead and give us an email or a call, and we can discuss that, because we probably will want to see those as well. It's not possible to include a listing of all the Enterobacteriaceae. In addition to submitting the isolate on an auger slant, we would also ask that you include a copy of your instrument printout and, if it was performed, the results of your modified Hodge test. Again, this will help us to make sense of the data that we're going to be generating during this surveillance project. A little cautionary note here, just be aware that the imipenem MICs for Proteus, Providentia, and Morganella species may be higher than those for meropenem or doropenem. And this is due to an intrinsic resistance and not necessarily due to the carbapenemase mechanism. However, we probably will still want to test them. It's just that the results might appear a little bit more strange in those three species. On the next slide, how to submit. Again, I'd like to emphasize that we need these organisms to be submitted on slant only. We cannot accept auger plate, and it is against transportation regulations to ship those by commercial carrier. And please include a copy, as I said before, of your identification and your antimicrobial susceptibility testing results. And the easiest way would be just to include a printout from the automated instrument. Include the results of your modified Hodge test if it was performed. And we do have a specific test created in our laboratory information system for this test, but we are not going to be changing our lab requisition because of the potentially short time frame for this grant that ends in June. So if you could just enter CRE confirmation as the name of the test in the other part of the NGCH lab requisition, and we'll be looking at a picture of that in just a minute. On slide 18, you can transport the organisms to Lansing via your hospital. Many couriers are driving up every evening. You can send it through the mail, through FedEx or UPS. Just be aware that you need to follow the regulations for shipping infectious substances Category B. Those are in Category UN 3373. And again, if you need some help with that, give us a call or shoot us an email, and we can help you out with that. On the next slide, the testing that we'll be doing, as mentioned before in the project design, we're going to be doing a gram stain, confirming the organism ID. We'll be performing the reference method MIC using CLSI broth microdilution and custom frozen panels that we've ordered. We will be performing the modified Hodge test with meropenem and then PCR assay for the KPC and NDM1 genes, as indicated by the results of the testing in the above list. The report that you receive will contain a report on the gram stain and organism identification, the MIC value and the interpretation, whether it's susceptible, intermediate, or resistant, or esdrianem, cefoxitin, ceftriaxone, doripenem, ertapenem, imipenem, and meropenem. We'll also be reporting to you the results of our modified Hodge test. And I want to mention again that we'll be using the newer CLSI breakpoints for the interpretation of these results. Slide 21, the report will also include a result for the PCR for KPC and NDM if it was performed. And that will either say the KPC gene DNA detected or KPC gene DNA not detected. And the same thing for NDM1, the NDM gene DNA was detected or was not detected. The report will also include comments that we have validated this procedure in the NGCH laboratory, as it is not cleared by the FDA. The notification of results, again, because positive KPC and NDM is considered an infection control emergency, we will be notifying the submitter and also the SHARP unit in our Bureau of Epidemiology. But I do want to make you aware that this is being conducted as a surveillance project, and we will try to get these results out in as timely a manner as we can, but it may, we may not be running them the same day. So, you know, in a perfect world, we would drop everything when we receive them and we would run them, but unfortunately that can't happen. So the next slide, I just want to walk you through a little bit where to find some of the things that you'll be needing for this project. This is a shot of our new homepage, and you'll find it at www.michigan.gov/NDCHLab. And on that page, if you go to the next slide, if you click on test request forms, it is very small print. When you click on test request forms, it will take you to this page, and we will be using the microbiology virology DCH 0583 requisition that I have circled for you here. On the next page is a picture of what this requisition looks like. The top part is pretty self-explanatory. We do need you to fill in the information that is asked for. And then on the lower half of that front side of the requisition, this is where you'll be writing in the name of the test, CRE confirmation, down in that box or other. There is a back side to the form, and we would ask that you please enter the ID that you got for your organism and the modified hot test result, or you can do that by attaching a copy of the microscanner by text printout. One thing that I do have on the agenda that I did not include in the slides is if you need supplies, we do provide a test kit for submitting isolates and infectious substances category B at UN3373. We have a whole kit available for you. It is called our Unit 47B, as in boy, and there are instructions on the agenda for how you can order some of those, and there is also a form online that you can request those shipping kits. We do ask that you use those only for shipping things back to our laboratory and not use those supplies for shipping to your other referral laboratories. And help keep our costs down. And I think that ends my portion of the presentation, and we'd like to open it up now if anyone has any questions. So you can unmute your phone and go ahead and ask us a question.
Do you just ask for a question?
Yes. Do you have a question?
Yeah. Do you provide, like, the slants in that kit? Or because our laboratory doesn't have slants.
We do not. You can use... For the Enterobacteriaceae, you could use a TSI plant.
So we would have to order them specially.
Yeah, you would if you're not doing any.
How many have they found in the state of Michigan?
We're not sure.
Okay.
They are typically associated more in nursing home populations, we think.
Okay.
And so, you know, some of the larger health systems a fair number of them.
I live in, like, we're in the UT part of Michigan.
Uh-huh.
In a smaller area. It's a smaller hospital. But, like, we see a lot of MRSA right now.
Okay.
And I'm just wondering if we haven't even seen something. So I was wondering how many.
I don't believe we've had any reports from the Upper Peninsula of
We're in the Newberry area.
Brenda, are you on the call?
Yep, you're ready.
Yeah, do you know if we've had any reports yet from the Upper Peninsula?
We've had a report of a referral case.
Okay.
So we have had also the Vanco resistant enterococcus. So I'm just wondering if this is something that we might have seen, just not known about it, or... So that's what I need to tell my supervisor in order to get those slants in.
Yeah. You might just want to order a box of 10.
Okay.
You know, to keep on hand. And if you want to get a hold of me after the call sometime, we can discuss this in more detail. I think I can give us a little bit more information.
All right. That sounds great.
Thank you. Okay. Are there any other questions?
Yeah, I have a question.
Okay.
From a health system that probably sees maybe 10 a week or every, so, you know, there are a number of these. Would you rather us batch them? Or could we batch them if we wanted to send them to you?
I think that's very reasonable. I'll double check with Dr. Rutherick. He was not able to be on the call today. And again, if you're seeing that many, we may decide, you know, once established that you have that organism in your vicinity, you know, you may not need to send us every single isolate for the whole duration of the project. But, again, that would be something that we'll kind of have to play by ear.
Okay, because perhaps we could take it offline, because we already do a screening for a number of these organisms that we use cefepime rather than the third generation, that we can rule out a lot of, like, the enterobacters, et cetera. Maybe we can work something out with you on that.
Sure. And, again, as I said, we're sort of, you know, playing this by ear as we go, because there are some unknowns, and we would certainly want to be flexible about that. So, again, why don't you shoot me an email, and we can discuss with Dr. Redrick in more detail.
Okay, that sounds good.
Okay.
Now, can I ask, is he from a larger area?
Yeah.
Right. So you're
very large.
From the lower part of Michigan?
Yeah, southeast Michigan.
Okay.
Yeah, and you know, that's another issue, that there is a lot of variation depending on the patient population and so on. So, again, something that we're hoping to get a little bit better handle on, and we'll be reporting back to you what we find, which I'm sure will be just really interesting, no matter what it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you. Good question. Are there any other questions?
I have one more question.
Yes, go ahead.
We have frozen isolates of past KPCs. Would you be interested in those?
I will have to check with Dr. Redrick on that. I think we want to kind of go from this point forward, although we're looking for a few NGM positive isolates to verify our PCR assay. But I don't know that we want to be doing a look back. However, I'm not 100% sure on that. So, how many do you think you have?
You have 30 or 40?
Pardon?
30 or 40?
30 or 40, okay. We probably want to talk to you on an individual case basis. I don't think we probably want to test all of those from one location. But again, something I will check with Dr. Redrick about.
Okay.
And we can post the answers through our listserv if you have a contact on the listserv, and if not, please send me an email and I'll make sure that we answer that question for you. Okay. Thank you. Are there any other questions?
I just have a question considering the email that is your contact email. So is that the one that's the DOEHMEM that's showing up right now? Is this your contact?
Yes, and thank you for that's a very good question. That is my email and also my phone number on the screen there. B as in boy,
okay.
O-E-H, M as in Martha, E-M as in Martha, at Michigan.gov. And my telephone number is 517-335-9654.
Presentation, can we download it, or will it be on your website so we can get some of the more granular information from it?
Yes, it will. It might take just a couple of days, but we also have been recording the audio portion too, so you could listen, or if you missed it, can listen, And again, we'll be providing some additional guidance documents, you know, kind of more of a checklist type thing, and probably a flow chart.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Well, if there are no other questions, I would like to thank you very much for taking time out of what I'm sure has been a very busy afternoon for everybody, and we appreciate your participation, and please don't hesitate to email or call if you think of a question after we're finished here, and we will be posting the presentation on our website very soon.
Okay.